Hello, hello, beautiful people. Welcome to the Green and White Soapbox, the show for people and by people discussing, debating, and doing all things young, gifted, and black, telling our stories and hearing our voices, the space for being seen and being heard. I am Letlhogonolo Mosue, and I am joined today by my lovely, brilliant, and dynamic co-host Tshegofatso Tornado T Maseme. I just made that up today, just for the record.
I noticed.
And we, and we have a great session lined up for today. So say hello, T, and tell everyone who's listening what we have in store for them today.
Hi, everyone. I'm just so amazed. You always have these names for me. I don't know when you have the time to make them up. But
forever ready. Forever ready.
I see. All right, yeah. So we have a lot in store for all our listeners today. It has been like 527 days since South Africa has been in lockdown as a result of the threat brought upon our lives by the COVID-19 pandemic. Wearing of masks and or face shields and social distancing has become the new way of affection and our new norm. It is over a year, and yet we still find ourselves still battling the pandemic. But unlike a few months ago, today we have a little bit of hope in us, you know, through the introduction of the vaccine that's here to help us fight the virus. Yet, with this, there still remains so much information around us, so much uncertainty, and it can be a bit overwhelming. With all that being said, we have decided to dedicate today's show to the power of information, the COVID-19 vaccine story. Today's episode is not to force anyone into getting vaccinated, not at all, but it's all about assisting you in making a conscious decision with regards to the vaccine. And to help us with that, we have an amazing special guest who happens to be female. Yes, 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 black girl magic.
Black girl magic.
Yes. Who bring us into light as we discuss the vaccination uncertainty, and any vaccine efficacies, and many more.
And so with that being said, in the spirit of black girl magic, help me introduce, make some noise, clap your hands, do whatever it is that you need to do for our special guest, Woo-hoo! Who happens to be an experienced pediatrician, a infectious diseases specialist, a Wits University clinical lecturer based in the public health sector at the biggest hospital in Southern Africa, Chris Hani Baragwanath Academic Hospital. She also is currently a PhD fellow at Wits Vita since January 2020, with her research topic being, and wait for this, this is some heavy English also, we got to take this step by step, epidemiology of community and hospital-acquired invasive infections in young infants. Above all else, she's a wife, a mother, and a child health advocate. This is the true manifestation of black girl magic. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, everyone, everywhere, please help us welcome Dr. Fikile Cynthia Mabena. Welcome, Doc. Hey, 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 hey.
Hey, Doc.
That's a heavy intro. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us. We truly do appreciate this, and we really just are looking forward to having this chat about something that's so important, I know, to your heart and calling, because as much as this is your profession, we do believe in the conversations that we've had that this is your calling and this is your ministry. So without any further ado, let's get straight into it. Are you ready, T?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's do this. So we have a mouthful of things to get out there. This pandemic, it's been 571 days. Get day 571 of 21 of lockdown. And so we've heard so many different stories. We've heard so many different things. But what's most important now is that we have a glimmer of hope, and that is the vaccine. But there's still so much uncertainty. There's so much that we're not aware of. And the first thing, like every other thing, it's building a foundation and getting an understanding of things. So first things first, what is vaccination? Why is it important? And, you know, especially in the context of this pandemic, and what is the difference between a vaccine and a cure for a disease or virus?
Okay. So I think vaccines are one of the most important healthcare interventions that mankind has come up with. They are a way, they are in short, vaccines are a form of prevention. They are a preventative measure. So we've all heard, and it sounds very cliche, but we've all know prevention is better than cure. Mm. I mean, I think in this disease and in many other diseases, that still holds true. And really, that's why vaccines are important, is because they are a way of preventing. So what vaccines are really, they are, and there's a myriad of ways, you know, in which vaccines are produced, but what they really do in essence is they trick the body. So a vaccine is a way of tricking the body into thinking it has already come into contact with a particular virus or bacteria, and then by so doing it masters and it creates a form of protection that the body will now know, keep in its memory, so that whenever the body gets presented now with the actual virus or bacteria, that it acts as if it's seen it before, and then it musters up all those protective qualities, be they, you know, we know about antibodies, but there's so much more in immunology. There's so much more that, you know, the cell-mediated immunity, there's the immunoglobulins, which are antibodies. So there's a lot. It's not as simple as, I know we always thought about soldiers that, you know, come in and they protect. And that's a simplistic, and it's a good way of explaining, because, you know, that's something that a lot of people have a concept of. But it really is just more than one way, you know, of protection, but that the body masters up and is able to remember. I think the big thing about immunity that gets created is the memory, is that the body has a memory of this virus or bacteria, such that when it does get presented, then it can fight it as if it's seen it before.
Oh, wow. That's
so that's what vaccines are. They are a form of prevention, and a cure is something that usually comes after the fact, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'll make an example with something that I think a lot of people know about. TB, for example, we've got a vaccine against TB. This vaccine, unfortunately, doesn't work as well for adults in preventing against, you know, TB as we know it, pulmonary TB, but it is very good at preventing children from getting a kind of disseminated TB, which is a really bad TB that can infect the brain and other organs of the body. And when children get this vaccine, they really are protected against that. So a cure would be then giving treatment for TB, which is what? Which is 6 months, for example, worth of medication. So we always think a cure is what we want, you know, and we do. In a lot of ways, it helps us. But a cure isn't as simple always as, you know, I do this and then I'm fine. It's always, it's sometimes a big, long process. And sometimes by the time you are getting a cure, you've had, you know, repercussions from the illness in itself. You know, if you get pulmonary TB, you can get your lungs hurt. Yes, you can get cured, but you might never recover that part of your lung, you know. So cures are there and we love them, but they are not the end all and be all. And ultimately, we want to prevent people from getting diseases rather than just cure them.
So in essence, cliche as it sounds, prevention is better than cure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, something like this that we're doing now is also, you know, public health is about preventative medicine. It's about teaching people about how to do things right, exercise, eating right. All of those are ways of preventing illnesses, right?
Yeah.
You want to do the right things initially to prevent yourself from getting sick and having to cure them, because cure also comes with costs, right?
Mm-hmm.
It comes with time. It comes with so many other things, right? So you want to prevent all of those things. It comes with time away from work, time away from school, you know? So you do. You want to prevent illnesses rather than have to cure them. Yes, when they are there, ultimately you do want to cure them, but prevention is key.
That is amazing.
It's a long answer.
It's a long one, but it's definitely it's better than, I think it's the greatest answer that I know for myself, even as someone who's been vaccinated. You still have all these questions that linger, so this is absolutely, absolutely amazing. And the beautiful thing is that you weren't superfluous about it, so thank you for that as well. So now, we understand that. Then there's an element, especially because we live in a capitalistic world and, you know, everything has a system, everything has a place, and of course this is a story all on its own for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, what then we want to find out, or what I'd like to know certainly, and I know a lot of other people would like to know, because it builds into this notion of skepticism, is It might be a lengthy one, but what is the general process that is undertaken for a vaccine to be created, to be put on the market? Who determines what, and basically who writes the rules? Because, you know, we receive things once we have heard them or once they've been packaged, but who writes the rules? We just accept as sheep, I guess, but who writes the rules?
Yeah, so, I mean, your first statement is correct in that we really are, I read a quote recently that said, we are all puppets, but some puppets are aware of the strings. So, I think much as, and we are part of a system, and you know, that we didn't create, that we kind of fall into, but I suppose some puppets are aware of the strings and some aren't. And that's really the difference, because maybe you can't control everything, but you can be aware of things. So we do know that pharma makes money from vaccines. The same way that Coca-Cola makes money from drinks and whatnot. But as to whether vaccines are effective or not, I suppose that comes with experience. It comes with us seeing. And I think as a clinician, my passion or my putting importance on vaccines comes more from what I've seen them do, rather than, you know, I know, and I am not clueless as to whether they enrich certain people or not. Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure they do. And you see this often, even with, you know, vaccines not being manufactured anymore as much as they were, when they don't really benefit, or you know, or the diseases aren't a threat to the first world as they are to, you know, third world countries.
Yeah,
so you know,
yeah,
these things are effective, but because they are not affecting the correct people,
yeah,
then you get pharma feeling like, then maybe this isn't lucrative enough, we shouldn't be making it anymore. And I think that also is another thing that highlights their effectiveness. So you know they work, but you know, just because they're not working for the right people, they might not get manufactured. And that's the bad side of it. The good side is that we know that, you know, vaccines, how they get made is they don't get tested on people first. They first have to come up with a concept where, you know, does this vaccine work in the lab? And then they go to preclinical trials, which involves animals. And then once that's passed, then they get into clinical trials. And the clinical trials, they get tested first on a few people, healthy adults who are voluntary, get tested in them. And then if there's any problems, even at any one of these stages, you can it. It gets canned. You stop it. So it's regulated not only by the people who sell at the stage, but it's regulated by health authorities, by ethics authorities that are affiliated to the government and to usually to universities. So you start with preclinical studies, you get into clinical studies, a few people. If it passes that, then it gets introduced into a large number of people, which is what we saw live. I think what has been interesting about COVID is that it's something, you know, something that's gone on for years, and clinicians have known about, the public for the first time were aware of it with COVID, you know, with COVID vaccines. But it's not an unusual process. It's something that's been going on for years, right? So you get the preclinical trials, and then you get the clinical trials. And then, you know, once you've established the efficacy, first the safety, and then the efficacy of a vaccine, then you can then introduce it. So once the vaccine has been introduced into the public, you still continue to monitor it.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, stage four, they call it phase four of vaccine trials, is where it's already in market, but even then you're still monitoring how it happens. So this didn't start with this vaccine. That happens with all vaccines and medications. Once they've been sold into the public, you still get authorities like SAHPRA that monitor, you know, the effects of people. Because yes, you've tested it in thousands of people, but you haven't tested it in everybody. And there might, and it does sometimes pop up that some effect you only notice once it's been introduced to a large number of people, or people in different countries, or, you know, things like that. So that post-marketing monitoring still happens, and it's always happened. So those are the phases. It's four phases. It's preclinical, and then it's the clinical stuff, and then it's post-marketing. So, you know, bodies like SAHPRA, the government, that are, you know, not completely affiliated to the bank, universities, ethics committees, those are the rule makers, basically.
Wow.
That's long.
But it's still amazing, because as I'm sitting, and I guess this is another conversation for another day, as to, you know, the things that we're fed, the things we're constantly fed, because, you know, they always need to kind of, you know, fall into a specific narrative. And so you forget that actually this has sort of kind of happened before. History has shown that this is still something that happens. So, no, this is absolutely mind-blowing. I'm just sitting here and I am just in awe. This is probably the greatest medical lecture that I've ever been a part of. I don't know about you, but it's the greatest medical lecture that I've been a part of.
So I just want to ask, you speak about prevention of illnesses. So you're not specific in saying prevention of a virus or prevention of a bacteria. So just asking in general, we have so many chronic illnesses that we are currently suffering from, you know, your HIV and AIDS, your cancer. Like, how far are we then? Because, I mean, I think you just said, I'm not quoting you or anything, but the golden key would be in preventing the cure rather than treating it, you know. How far are we now, you know, with regards to the big ones that we are still dying from, although we've sort of neglected them because our focus has been on COVID, but, like, how far are we there, you know?
So, I mean, and it's difficult. Obviously, you can't speak about every specific one because each one has different things, but I'll speak about the common things. For example, because I'm a pediatrician, pediatric HIV is something that I work with often. And a prevention for that is ultimately what you want. You want an HIV-free society. You want HIV-free babies. So how do you do that? You ensure that mothers test for HIV when they are pregnant, or that, you know, you can even take it back. Make sure that everybody in the population knows their HIV status, because once you know your HIV status as an adult, you can make sure that you start taking antiretroviral therapy, right? And suppose you could even take it further back and say, you know, you use protection when you're having intercourse to prevent yourself from actually getting HIV. But say you are infected with HIV, how do you then prevent your baby getting HIV infected? Then you take ARVs when you're pregnant and right through life. And we know that that's one of the amazing interventions that have occurred. When I was studying to become a pediatrician, and or just soon after I'd qualified as a doctor, when, you know, babies were born with HIV and they died, and there wasn't a lot that we could do for them. But right now in our HIV clinic, we have children that are living because they are on ARVs, but more importantly, we have a lot of mothers who are giving birth to babies that are HIV negative, who the mothers themselves are HIV infected. Do you understand? So that's the ultimate. You want to prevent these babies from getting infected. So you make sure that the mothers are taking their ARVs continuously, even whilst they are breastfeeding, to prevent infecting their baby. So that's one example, right? And then another example is chronic illnesses like diabetes, for example, and hypertension. How do you prevent those? Healthy lifestyle, eating right, exercising. But having said that, we do know that there are some things that are congenital, right, that you are born with, that some people have a predilection for, that can't be prevented per se. So I work with infectious diseases, and I suppose the thing about infectious diseases is something has to come from somewhere, so you've got a window of trying to prevent it. Mm-hmm. But with things like cancer, for example, you often can't predict whether somebody will have cancer or not. And it often isn't anybody's fault. It's not about what you've done or didn't do that you get cancer. And having said that, though, there are cancers that we have been able to prevent. Like, I don't know if you guys know that we've got a program that started, I think, in 2009 in our children at school that get HPV, which is human papilloma virus vaccine. So we give it to pre-sexual girls to prevent them from getting something that we call human papilloma virus infection. What this virus has been shown to do is that when it infects young people, is that it can mutate the cells. It changes the cells of the cervix and causes cervix cancer. So we know that once they've had this vaccine, even if they are in contact with somebody who's got this virus sexually, they will not get cervical cancer. So that's one of the few cancers that we actually can prevent, right? So prevention is always better, guys. I mean, if you get cervix cancer, for example, the ultimate is that you might have to have either your cervix, you know, partially removed, or your entire womb removed, as opposed to getting a vaccine that prevents you from getting the cancer in the first place. So, I mean, It's an old adage, but prevention is always better than cure. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, not for everything do we have a preventative thing, but for a lot of infectious diseases we do. And I think we shouldn't lose out on the opportunity to want to, you know, get infected first. Like, some people are very much about, when you get things naturally, it's better than if you introduce like a vaccine or whatever. But if your child gets polio, for example, they could be maimed for life, right? That's a natural way of them getting polio. And yes, they will have antibodies to polio after that, but they could also not be able to walk, you know? Whereas if they got the polio vaccine, then they don't get, you know, that lifelong thing, natural thing that comes with polio.
Hashtag greatest medical lecture ever.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Greatest medical lecture ever. Because even as we're trying to, you know, shape the discussion around where we are right now, there's so many things that just make sense, and the puzzle is just being built. The puzzle is just forming itself. Hashtag greatest medical lecture ever.
I know, right?
And so, yeah, I'm just mind blown.
Are we not just mind the plug? Blown. We are plugs.
Dude, we are the plug. Get with it. Green and white. Green and white soapbox is where it's at. And so, I think as we move the conversation forward, Doc, one of the major things and why we're having this conversation is hesitancy. And the beautiful thing about the puzzle pieces coming together is this, and so I think we'll ask this as a two-part kind of question, so even if it's long, it's okay.
Okay.
Because it's hashtag greatest medical lecture ever. So we've just dealt with, you know, past experience. So, and this is the one thing. Child inoculation.
Mm-hmm.
We were taken, we take. Those who have children take their kids, you know, from infancy to the toddler stage to go and get inoculated.
Mm.
And so a lot of people who remain hesitant, yes, you have those who are hesitant, and I think we need to understand there are those who have taken the vaccine, there are those who are completely against it, and there are those who are hesitant.
Mm.
And so in this space of hesitancy, one of the most pertinent things that have come across is the fact that a lot of people say, but we don't know what's in it. But similarly, so when you would take a child to go and get inoculated, you don't know what's happening. I know for a fact that when I was a child and I went to the clinic, I don't know about you, Tia, but I'm sure, Doc, you can also attest. You just knew that you went to the clinic and nebalohlaba, but you don't know exactly what was that about. So in that space and in that space of, you know, uncertainty, there's also a space of uncertainty that is brought about by the fact that a lot of people are like, it's been too quick. Where did they find the time to develop all of this? Where did they find the time to create all of this? So we want to know, in the space of hesitancy and uncertainty, what would you attribute this thing of being okay to take your child to be inoculated, but being hesitant about the vaccine, number one? But certainly beyond that, are people, I would believe, you know, everyone is entitled to their opinion, and we're not trying to sway anyone's opinion. But on top of that, would you say people are justified in being hesitant because it didn't follow the right channels, whatever that may be, because that's what people are being fed?
Okay. So I think maybe I'll start with the last question first about the right channels. I think just, you know, as I've explained previously, that, you know, there's certain phases that a vaccine has to go through. And this vaccine has, in its development, also gone through the same, you know, phases.
Yeah.
They haven't, no steps have been skipped, right, when it came to how it had to, you know, for it to get to where it needed to get. What did happen is that, like SAHPRA and, you know, in the States, the FDA, what they did is they cut out a lot of red tape that often goes with, you know, with vaccinations, and that make it take a long time. And I think one of the important things was that the study was conducted in more than one place. So what often happens with vaccinations is that they will be conducted in, say, you know, in the first world, right? And then we will, in Africa, only become part of the, get the vaccination, there's usually like a lag, like a 3, 4, 5 year, sometimes 8 year lag from when a vaccine is introduced, is shown to be safe and efficacious, and it's even put into the vaccination program of, you know, the first world, to when it actually comes to Africa or, you know, other third world countries. Mm-hmm. So there's usually a lag. And one of the things that a lot of South African researchers were fighting for is to make sure that at the same time that this vaccine gets tested in first world countries, that it gets tested here as well. Because that's often the excuse and the delay, right? Is that, oh, we've only tested it in this population, it'll only come later. And the funding and all of that is also a problem. But with this vaccine, I was so proud that we actually got it to get tested here the same time that it got tested there. So that's a win. And it's a win for who? It's a win for us. It's a win for African people who otherwise would have been at the back line. And unfortunately, even now, we still are. We have, I mean, in the States, they are already vaccinating children. And in Africa, there are countries who are struggling to get elderly to still get their first doses. So that's already not equitable, right? It's already not fair. But that's the way that the world has been functioning in terms of vaccines. So we should, in fact, be fighting to get more vaccines to Africans who, you know, because of all our problems, have been dying a whole lot more than people in the, you know, if you look at the numbers, we have been, you know, our people have been dying a whole lot more than people in developed countries. So it's just to say that I think for me, it's important just to say that no corners have been cut for this vaccine to be developed. Yes, it came as a surprise, even to the health and research fraternity, that this vaccine came so early. But it was a wonderful thing. It was a pleasant surprise. It was something that we all expected to take years, but it didn't take so long. Mm-hmm. And the reason that happened, one of the reasons is that they used a technology that had been there already, but had not been used in vaccines. So the mRNA vaccine technology had only been used in oncology, in cancer patients. And it hadn't been used. I think they were looking at starting to use it. But it had been going on for years, right? I mean, close on 20 years that they'd been looking at that technology. So it's not something that somebody just came up with, like, now. What happened is that, yes, they thought to use it in vaccines, but the technology had been there already. The other thing is that, so the vaccine had been, technology had been there. Vector vaccines, like your Johnson & Johnson and your AstraZeneca, they use something, it's called vector mode. So they don't use mRNA, but they use vector vaccine. So they kind of piggyback onto something. So they take another virus, it's called adenovirus. They kill off that virus, and then they kind of piggyback parts of the coronavirus onto there. So they kind of make up a new poppy vaccine, you know. So you've got the adeno with bits of the coronavirus. But when the cells of the body see, they pick up on that part of the coronavirus, and they think they've seen the coronavirus, and they make memory cells as well as antibodies towards coronavirus, so that when you get coronavirus, your body thinks you've seen this before, and it brings out those memory cells and all those antibodies again to kill this virus, right? But so and that technology, the vector technology, had been used before. It's not new. It's been used in other vaccines before. So it's and even speaking about children, I was trying to count as I was coming. We've got vaccines that prevent against BCG, prevents against TB, as I said, disseminated TB in children. We've got a vaccine for polio. We've got a vaccine for diphtheria. We've got a vaccine for tetanus. We've got a vaccine for rotavirus. We've got a vaccine for pneumococcal vaccine. We've got a measles vaccine. So all of those get into a baby by the time they are one, right? And we don't give one dose. We've got booster. So the idea of a booster is also something not new. It's not something that people are saying. I've seen there's a meme going around with how we're going to be zombies by the time we receive like our seventh booster.
Yeah.
But actually, I mean, just the diphtheria and tetanus, for example, we get like we give babies 1, 2, 3, 4. So they get the first one and they get 3 boosters, you know, of that for it to work. Because we do, waning immunity is not a new thing. We do know that, because this is not the real virus, right? Yes, you'll make antibodies, but they might not be lifelong. We are lucky with some vaccines that we get to give it to you and we never need to give it to you again. Like yellow fever, for example. I don't know if you guys have traveled to certain parts of the world, particularly in Africa, where they've got yellow fever. Before you get into the country, you have to be vaccinated for yellow fever. And that vaccine, for years, we'd have to get boosters for it every 5 years. But recently, they realized that, actually, these antibodies look like they're lasting for more than 20 years. So they've actually said, if you've had this vaccine, you don't need to get a booster again. But for the longest time, you'd always had to get boosters every 5 years. So it's not a new thing to get boosters. We know, we are reminding the body, we are helping it, and we find out about this in those very trials, in those trials when you do it. You'll start with one vaccine and then you see they build up an immunity but it dies off too soon. Let's try with 2, and they try 2, and then once they've seen with 2 or 3 it actually is a robust immunity that lasts long, then that's why when you recommend it you say let's give 2. But with COVID, what happened is it was live. Everything was live. We got the vaccine, we found out, you know, as we were going. So it looks like now they're adding another booster, but this is different. It's something that happened. We were all learning as we were going about this illness, right? It was really something novel. It was something new. It's not something different, the fact that, you know, sometimes a vaccine won't work with one dose, that you might need to give a booster. And we've got that. We've seen that. We've got it with children. And it's just that this is happening with everybody watching. And then I suppose, you know, with us, it's not a shock because we know this. But I suppose for everybody else who's never seen this, they're just thinking, now it was 1, now it's 2. But it happens with vaccines. All you're trying to say is, you know, what is better? How much will give me a robust immunity, right? And you must know that with these vaccines, we started out wanting to get a vaccine that will prevent you from infection. Unfortunately, it doesn't. But what it does do is it prevents us from getting severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And, you know, I mean, I can't stress enough how important that is. When, you know, I'd rather, if I got COVID, had a little cold and was miserable for a few days, and then I'm well again and can go continue, you know, looking after my family and having my life, rather than being hospitalized and actually dying, right? So it's not a small thing that it prevents against. It's a big thing. You'd rather, you know, and yes, first prize would have been, you get the shot, you can't get infected. Absolutely. That's what we wanted. It didn't go that way, but it does prevent against severe disease and death, and that we know. So you don't want to be the person who says, yeah, they say if you get it naturally, you still get immunity. Yeah, sure, that's true, you can. But you don't know if you're going to be the one who gets it and gets severely sick and dies. And why do you want to find out that way? You know, if... So, yeah.
Give it to me, as a doctor, you know.
You still have that. And I suppose, I suppose you do. You get that. But it's just that I think the ultimate for us as clinicians is we want to save lives. Mm. It's about nothing else except saving lives. I would rather have people not have to be hospitalized and die, you know, to prove a point, right? We are about saving lives. We're about saying this thing is going to do this. Can we rather take this as opposed to playing dice and saying, I might be the one who actually, and yes, you might be. You might be the one who gets it and is okay and is not severely sick. But you might also be the one who, you know, that your family lose a child, that, you know, a child becomes orphaned, you know. Mm. We don't want that. Mm. Mm.
I'm actually glad that you like bringing up all these Pfizer's, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, you know, because that then brings me to my next question, to say that I have so many options, doctor. Like, I'm sitting at home and I hear this facility is offering a Johnson & Johnson, this one is offering Pfizer, then there's AstraZeneca. Where do I go? Like, how do I choose? Because, I mean, we are not medical professionals, you know. So there's only so much we know. And with all these options, it's not like saying, okay, now I'm going to compare prices or whatever, then I know which one is best. So it is quite difficult, like, to decide. And then they say, I've read things like, no, Johnson & Johnson is strong because you only go for one shot, where Pfizer, you have to go for two shots, you know. So, you know, understanding all of these, you know, and like what to choose, where to go, you know, you're a medical professional, so you have like good advice that you can give us. And then the other thing is, you know, that you also spoke about this is happening live. So it's as if we're learning as we go, you know, and it's also applicable to you as well. But now it means, I'm also asking myself now, with all these variants developing, like, what is the saying now about the vaccine? Should I just sit at home? Because, I mean, anyway, what are the variants that are being discovered as we go along? So what does this also say, doctor?
Okay. So that's an important question. And I think, and I get it often about, you know, the different vaccines. And I think I've just alluded to say where one uses a vector and then the other one is an mRNA. But in study, so when they, you know, like when they do the trials, they saw with Johnson & Johnson, they got a great efficacy after one dose. So you go with one dose. That's where that comes from, right? And then when they did the mRNA studies, when they did one dose, you got some immunity, but not as great as after two doses, right? But for all of them, the Moderna, so the Moderna is similar to the Pfizer, right? But we haven't had Moderna in the country. We've only had Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where then how many doses comes from, right? Is that you test it on the people and then you see of these people that we've tested, because that's what they do in the trial, right? Is they give some people vaccine and they give some people placebo. Placebo basically means kimit, like asilo, right? Asilo. So you treat, and then, but everybody's blinded. So nobody knows what's what, right? Yeah. Except the pharmacist who gives it out. So they label it same as if it's the same thing. That's how you do it. You divide people and nobody knows what they got. And the doctors also don't know who got what. So you give it that, and then these people keep coming back, and then you follow them up. They're in a community that has COVID, and then you keep testing. Of these people in the same community who now got, some people got this, some people got the real thing, some people got placebo, how many of these groups got infected? That's how you test vaccines, right? And then they come back, and you see, the group that actually got the vaccine, and we didn't even know it, now as we're testing the results, you know, 95% of them didn't get sick. These ones, just about all of them got sick, the ones that got meat. You know? So that's how you know. That's how you test the efficacy of a vaccine. Because so you're saying in a controlled environment where people, everything is the same, the only difference is that one got Medzi, one got vaccine. And then you see that these people are protected, right? And then also, they looked at those people that got infected, so that small number in the group that got vaccinated, when they did get infected, they didn't end up in hospital. They didn't die. This group, lots of them got that. So that's how it gets tested, right? That's how you know what's what. So with that understanding, you have to understand that this doesn't mean that this thing is 100%, right? Mm-hmm. That's why you never get, we always are giving out figures that, you know, especially for infection, we know that some people will get infected. When we compare J&J and the Pfizer vaccine, we saw that a lot more people with Pfizer didn't get infected, get an infection. So it prevented infection. It wasn't a lot of people, right? But there were a lot more than compared to J&J. So J&J didn't do so well with infection, ne? As well as Pfizer. But Pfizer also didn't do so great, because we know even now in our country, we can see it. There's people who've gotten Pfizer, but they still get infected. But both of them, when it came to hospitalization, severe disease, and death, they did equally well. So that's why I always advise people when they say Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer, I'm like, it really doesn't matter, because I think they both will prevent against severe disease and death in similar ways, right? Where they differ slightly is that, you know, Pfizer is better at preventing infection, than Johnson & Johnson, but also not that much. But there is. I mean, we've had instances even in families that we've seen of somebody who's had Pfizer and another family member gets infected and everybody else gets infected except that one person who got Pfizer. Okay, not even infected. Yeah, so we've seen that. So, but that does, you know, but we know that that doesn't hold for everybody, right? There are people who, even after vaccination, will get infected. But what they want, what won't happen to them is that they won't get severe disease. And even if they do land up in hospital, they are unlikely to die, right? They're unlikely to need, you know, ventilation and die. So, ultimately, the thing is, you know, for prevention of severe disease and death, they are equally the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whichever one you get. I suppose J&J would be nice in areas that are far flung,
yeah,
where it's hard to go back, mm-hmm, you know, for a second dose. In those regions, you'd say, you know, rather, you know, go for J&J because then it's a one dose and it's done, right? But you're not preventing those, helping those people any less than, you know, the people that are getting the Pfizer vaccine. So the variants, yeah, I mean, so there are ongoing studies. So the one thing about all these vaccines that's the same is that they work. So you obviously, when you are making a vaccine, you want to take a part of the virus that will be presented to the cell, right? That's, you know, that the cell of the body will recognize and say, ah, I see this is COVID vaccine, and then they make antibodies against that. So they've all been using what we call a spike protein. So that's a spike protein on the virus. But now there's a lot of studies, and the mutations, these variants, have all been changes in that spike vaccine, in the spike protein, right? So, which is a bummer, right? Because, you know, it means that when they become less effective, it'll be all these vaccines. So now already we are in the research world, they're being called first generation vaccines because we know we probably do need to come up with vaccines that look at a different part of the virus other than the spike, a spike protein, right? Because then if you do that, you probably will evade these mutations. So your vaccine will work anyway, even if it mutates in that area. But it's novel. This is what happens when you've got a virus that's new, is that you learn as you go. So these variants will keep coming because viruses do that in life. This is how they adapt. They change. Like Liobu, when he gets to a different place and I'm like, how do I survive here? I need to change something of mine. Yeah, they do. Viruses are constantly mutating. That's how they survive. Because they can't survive outside of humans. Né? That's the thing about a virus. It needs people to get into. So if, you know, you're making it hard to get into them, they're going to keep changing to try and be able to get into you. This is what the kid...
Very resistant.
This is what they do. This is what viruses do. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so that's that. The variants are going to keep coming. So we're hoping. I mean, as somebody was saying, that one of the epidemiologists was saying, they were asking her, so what do you think in the future is going to happen with this virus? Is it going to be endemic? Endemic means like the cold, right? We know that every year we get flu, for example. It's endemic. It's there all the time. It just, you know, it comes at certain times. So it might become endemic, but she was saying, Prof. Cohen was saying, I'm so skeptical. I don't want to predict anything about COVID anymore because the minute I start to predict something else happened, I mean, these variants, we couldn't have anticipated that it would happen so soon, but they did, right? So, yeah, I think less we make predictions with this virus, the better. But we do. The thing is, and that doesn't take away, though, from the fact that we know, what we do know so far to help us is that these vaccines are at least working to prevent us from getting severe disease and death. And it is, like you said in your intro, it is a glimmer of hope for us now that we have, to try and save as many lives as possible.
Hashtag greatest medical lecture
ever.
I will not stop saying that because as I am sitting and listening and I'm just in awe, like everything that I've read, everything that I've heard, every message that's ever been sent, it's just like, y'all don't know nothing. Y'all don't know nothing. Come to the Green and White Soapbox if you want to know something, because I am just mind blown. And I think just before, you know, your next question, T, and before we get to a 70-second Mythbuster, you know, I just have a follow-up on that based on what Doc said in terms of this notion of placebos and all of that, the side effect aspect of things. Because you say some people who, in a specific test, some people who got the placebo would have gotten sick or some might not have and so on and so forth. Is there a massive mental health or mental health / mental block that we impose upon ourselves as people from a point of, you know, not being informed insofar as, you know, if you do go get vaccinated and they'll tell you that you've got this side effect, this or that these are the side effects, but then because you got vaccinated and because someone said this, all of a sudden you're like, oh my goodness, this vaccine is not working, oh my goodness, I'm dying, so on and so forth. So would you say that, yes, granted that there are side effects with any medication, so on and so forth, are some of the side effects self-imposed? Do we self-impose them as people just based on everything that we're fed and, you know?
Look, I don't, I mean, I don't want to minimize or trivialize what people feel, right? You feel what you feel. And we know that there are side effects to this vaccine and many other vaccines. I mean, moms who take babies for their immunizations will tell you that, I know the day of the vaccine, you know, and the following day, baby is a bit irritable, can be a little bit hot, you know, and whatever. We know this is the body now's immune system saying, hey, I saw something and I'm acting up, right? So this is you building up their immunity. So it's, they're not uncommon. They happen. And that people feel them, it's fine. But I, you know, in the same way that that baby, when the mom comes, will say, just give a little Panadol and watch. They'll be fine in a day or two. And they are. We do the same for adults. When they feel the headache, when they feel the whatever, we say, take this and then you'll be fine. So, you know, there's mitigation. You can do something about the side effects. Yeah. They're not the end all and be all. And, you know, we don't stop taking vaccine just because, oh, I might have a little bit of a whatever, you know, a fever, fatigue, a headache after taking vaccine. There are also some more serious side effects, but even with those, we have, you know, we've got treatment for them. We know what to do with them. And like I said, the monitoring continues as it always has with vaccines. So we wouldn't know about these side effects if we weren't monitoring for them. We know about them because even through the study phases, as the people were getting vaccinated and we saw these, we documented them and we followed them up. So I know, I mean, I think there's a, I often say the hesitancy comes from a mistrust of the system, right? But if you realize that the same system that made the vaccines is the same system that said these are the side effects, it's because they care to look for the problems and to mitigate against them. So I'm not saying, you know, the man, trust the man, and but the reality is there is a system in place, and we, even with the children immunizations, we've got bodies that are continually looking for problems with. So whenever even a child now gets vaccinated and then they have a problem afterwards, clinicians will report it and this body will investigate and follow up. So this thing that's happening with COVID is not new. We've always been following up post-immunizations, any problems that happen, and we continue to do it with COVID. So if there's a death that gets reported of somebody who got vaccinated, we follow that up. They get an autopsy and then we realize, oh, shame, it's such a coincidence. I mean, there could be people who died. They are. There are people who die from their cancer or from their whatever, because they were recently, after they were recently vaccinated. There is a time period causality. There's a time period association, but it doesn't imply causality. So just because I got this, I ate an apple, and then I later died, does not mean that the apple is the reason I died. So you have to check the death. You have to investigate the death and say, ah, it just so happened that on this day, this person also had whatever, when you find out your autopsy. But, it, you know, it's that. It's important to understand that, that people don't suddenly stop having heart attacks just because there's vaccinations. People don't necessarily stop dying from their cancers. People don't necessarily, you know, all those other things are still continuing. And in these bodies, what they do is they also look at the background of these conditions. So they look in the age group of whatever to whatever, what is the death rate of heart attacks? Has it suddenly gone up now with the vaccines? Yes or no? So that's continuing. That continually happens as well. So we don't just, you know, I know it's sensational to say, Mang got a vaccine last week and then this week they died.
Exactly. No. Exactly.
But people die from many things. So yeah, it's important. And those deaths do get investigated. Autopsies are done. We follow up results. And unfortunately, in a time when you're vaccinating so many people and COVID is still rife, you also get people who are infected with COVID and die from COVID soon after vaccination, because they were probably sitting and thinking, oh, I'll watch it. And then they feel a bit sick and they're like, you know? And unfortunately, it's, vaccines don't work like that. They are prevention. You should do it before you get infected. Ne?
Speaking of that, doctor, sorry, Khlohi, yes. I'm going to interrupt you again now. You said, obviously, it's prevention, but you get those people barring, now they really sick, get COVID, ne? Yo, I really must go vaccinate now because, oh, boy, ne? Ne? It happens,
do,
right?
Those.
So what? How long must I wait now? So it's like, gula, and I don't want this to happen again. Now I've learned the hard way, unfortunately. Okay. So how long do I wait before I then go for my vaccination?
So we say a month after your last, so after you've gotten out of your isolation period. So you wait at least a month. And then in some studies, they saw that actually if you wait a bit longer, like up to 3 months, your immunity might actually be better. But the minimum is a month. So at least 1 month after your isolation period, when you are sick with COVID, you can go vaccinate.
Thanks, doctor.
Can we just say this one last time, everyone? Hashtag greatest medical lecture
ever.
Like ever. And you know, as we're wrapping up, so there's a challenge that we're about to undertake. So we're going to put 70 seconds on the clock.
All right.
And then in those 70 seconds, doc, you're going to give us seven. You're going to...
Also, I must come up with a myth.
Yeah, well, yes, a myth that you can... So you, it would be, this is the myth, here's the fact. This is the myth, here's the fact. The aim is 7 in 70 seconds. So that's what, 10 seconds, a myth and busting the myth. And if you fail to do that, then Tsiru has to buy me McDonald's.
Oh, wow.
She doesn't want to part with her money. That's what's going to happen.
I must think of all the
myths that I've
heard.
All my money is on
now.
You, doctor.
Yes. 70 seconds. We're counting you down. 5,
Yo.
4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Okay. So, first myth about COVID is that corners have been cut. You know, this vaccine came too quickly and... you know, there's something wrong. Things didn't happen right. That's not the truth. The truth is, this vaccine followed the exact same phases of vaccine trials, like all vaccines normally do. Suppose the difference is that, yes, we got it soon, but that's a plus and not a minus. Okay, second myth. Second myth is that, when you get vaccinated with COVID, that it causes erectile dysfunction. That is not true. That has been looked at. In particular, men who have been vaccinated have been followed up, and we haven't seen an increase in erectile dysfunction due to the vaccine. So erectile dysfunction will still happen in that population for other reasons, but not as a result of the vaccine. Another myth. That COVID... white people? What? Okay, I suppose in the beginning, people used to say COVID doesn't exist, doesn't kill black people, and it only kills black people. Yeah,
that's fine, but you can finish the thought. It's still okay. You can still finish the thought.
I'm sorry,
Doctor!
I'm sorry.
Pay up.
I thought I had so many myths.
No, it's okay. We will definitely deal with those in a follow-up, because I don't like to predict a whole lot of things, but this is something that I will predict, that we definitely need to have a hashtag greatest medical lecture ever part two. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
That there's just so much with this, but so much even for us as a black community in terms of healthcare as a whole that we still need to get to, and who better to hear it from than Dr. Fab herself.
Wow. Young, our very own.
Our very own Dr. Fab. But thank you so, so much, Doc. This has been nothing short of amazing. This has been nothing short of phenomenal, and we're just so, so, so grateful for this, and we continue to send you all the love, the light, and the strength that we can muster, lifting all of you up as healthcare professionals, because you are all keeping us afloat. You have sacrificed so much. You have sacrificed your time, your livelihood, and so if we ever doubt that y'all were called, now more than ever we understand and know that you were called, and we just send you all positive vibes your way.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it, Doctor. We really, really do. And we've gained so much. We've gained so much. Honestly, we're not exaggerating. A lot of the stuff we're asking are not necessarily from people out there, but it's also some of the things we're also thinking, you know. So thank you for bringing that, that, you know, the fact that we can now understand, you know, and we're going into this understanding, and we're not just listening to whatever's out there. We hear things from people who are not even in the profession, you know. So we are really, really grateful for all the knowledge that you've imparted on us today. Thank you so very much. We hope that this is definitely not the last that we hear of you, and we hope that going forward we can, you know, carry on with other discussions and, you know, keep educating our people, our youth, and just, yeah, been great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time that you've afforded me to speak about this. I'm very passionate about this, but I think ultimately I'm passionate about saving people's lives, and I think this is one way of doing it. We've got one thing to help us, and we should all be taking up the opportunity to use it.
Thank you so, so much, Doc. Thank you so much, Tornado T. Thank you, everybody. It has been amazing. And when you finally listen to this, please drop your comments, share your thoughts, share with everyone, and let us keep the conversation going. Remember, the aim is but one, to be seen and to be heard. So from us to you, from the green and white soapbox, we have to say, stay kind and stay loving and be kind to one another. Tohi signing out.
Bye y'all, we love you, keep well.
Awesome. Bye.